and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 642.
What very exciting, stimulating content are we reviewing tonight, Mark?
I don't know. My head's starting to hurt already. We are, better or for worse, and we probably know what the answer is going to be of those, which choice will ultimately be proven true. We have decided, based on scheduling, to we have decided to play catch-up as much as we want to, or as much as we dare, with Absolute. So we're going to go very, very basic, giving a recap of the important things that happened in issues through 12. We were going to do 13, but that's too much Absolute for me at one setting. And I also actually did read 13. And I think, considering where we leave off in 12, it's kind of better off. It ends at least somewhat on a high note compared to where 13 goes.
So tonight Mark bit the bullet for us, much in the same way I did for KO, except
you didn't have to do that. I mean, it's the same thing, except we never
technically
really
you suggested tonight's episode.
No, I know. I don't know if I suggested it last week. I think you actually suggested it last week, and then you gave me the option to bail, and I didn't. But I'm just saying.
To be fair, I read 30 issues.
Yeah, but KO technically, all you had to do really give was like a, if you wanted to, all you had to do was probably give a paragraph explanation for the actual event. And
that's true.
So you chose to dive deeper into something we were not covering. We unfortunately chose to cover Absolute to start with, and then we kind of doubled down on saying we are going to go come back at some point.
This is how much we don't want to do this, people. We're literally passing the blame here right now.
It's like, and the saddest part is these four issues are probably the best four issues of the series.
Probably.
Probably so. But that just tells you again, based on writing and editorial decisions of why they let this book, damn it, or why they let this book go off the rails as much as they did early on.
All right. Well, let's jump into it. However you have this structured for us.
If I lose my shit somewhere during the course of this recording, it's because I'm in my last night of my hockey championship final, and I'm hanging on. On paper, I should have a comfortable lead to get me through the one more game that has to be played, that he's got a guy against me. But if I lose my shit, then you're going to know why. So my reaction a second ago is because he got another goal. And then my goal lead is down to 3, and I can't afford to lose that cat. Correction, I can afford him to tie me in that category. He can't flip it, because I can win in a tie. I'm ahead 5-4. He can tie me at 5, and I win the matchup on the tie break. But if he flips it, I'm fucked. So that's the only category right now it looks like I could lose. So I'm getting nervous as he's got he's got a bunch of guys still playing, and all my guys are going now. So if I don't get some goals in the next like 7 minutes, I'm gonna be fucked. As far as if he continues to get goals. So that's it. I'm just giving you a fair warning, because I will be really pissed.
This commercial break has been brought to you the FAA, Fantasy Addicts Anonymous. Please, everybody, welcome new member Mark Marble. Mark.
I guess now I have to leave it in. I was planning on editing it out. Okay, we'll see. And maybe the good thing about leaving it in, as the episode goes on, I can give an update on where I stand and my stress level. All right, so let's begin with issue 9. Issue 9 is probably my smallest little write-up for issue 9, because everything that happens of relevance is pretty straightforward. Simon, who I think I'm pretty sure we were introduced to Simon before. Simon, who works with Carrie, and excuse me, he does work with Carrie, but that's not what I meant. He works with Cameron, Joe's ex-wife here. Simon is paired up with Carrie Limbo, and if you know Green Lantern history, Carrie Limbo was also a psychic who was had a hot and heavy relationship, a love with Guy Gardner. How Al Ewing is bringing her into this.
Yeah, think low level Madame Xanadu.
Yeah. Yep. Which they double down on over and over, almost as an inside joke about what her abilities are and what they're not. Yeah. It kind of gets old after a while, but it's cute on some level. But Simon's paired up with Carrie Limbo, and they report to their boss that they connect Hal Jordan, based on his history, to Joe. And of course, their boss is a double agent working for Hector Hammond. So he reports that information to Hector Hammond, who puts an assassin who is Goldface. We get introduced to him earlier in the issue when he kills somebody else. But as far as we're concerned, he's Goldface, and he gets sent after Joe. Before we get to that point where he shows up, besides the normal bickering between Joe and Cameron, together they figure out that even though the ring only works completely with the green powers for Joe, if you took the ring and put it on your finger, it's still a powerful weapon. You can do things with it a normal person shouldn't be able to do just by putting the ring on. Cameron leaves to go off, and she's worried about Joe keeping a low profile. Not conveniently enough, because Goldface shows up a few minutes later. We also find out in this issue that Tomar is a title. It refers to being an anomaly. So Tomar Rae is Tomar Rae in this book, because Tomar Rae is, as we find out, is the anomaly of the red. So technically Joe would be Tomar Joe. But other than that, Goldface arrives. I guess he's apparently looking for the ring. So he shoots Joe a couple of times, and she's bleeding out. They got that information, the yellow weakness, because they have Todd Rice captured, and they've been torturing Todd Rice, and somehow he had the information about the gold passing through the shield or whatever over the city of Evergreen. So that's where they figured there was a gold weakness. So that's pretty much the highlights for issue 9.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add?
In terms of commentary on the issue, what do you want to do? You want to do all four?
I don't know. This is why we should have discussed this before I dove into it. Because I don't actually have any of the issues open at the moment. But if we're going to discuss, each issue as we do this, which will take longer, clearly, then I will open up 9. But I just don't know if there's anything else of relevance as far as.
Oh, like, okay, then, yeah, just keep barreling through it.
So issue 10, we find Todd Rice, who I mentioned he was being kind of tortured by Hector Hammond, who is super douchey, not surprisingly, in this entire series. We knew that before, but it gets worse. They submerge him completely in the black ooze that infected Hal, more or less just to see what's going to happen. Because Hector Hammond is hoping it's going to be something that he can use. Goldface has it up. He doesn't seemingly want to kill Joe, mostly because he wants the information in Joe's head about the ring and how it works and all this stuff. But he does the typical villain thing, talks too long. So Joe's able to kick him right in the nuts. And because Joe is bleeding out or punch him in the nuts, whatever it was. She punched him in the nuts. But either way, because she had blood all over, he takes the nut shot and he thinks that he's bleeding. So he starts freaking out ridiculously at first until he realizes, oh, it's not my blood. Meanwhile, Joe is able to crawl into the kitchen, and somehow in this odd configuration of a house, her kitchen actually has a door, which I don't think most kitchens actually do. But she actually finds that kitchen in Cameron's apartment has a door, which she's able to close, and she's able to use her green powers to essentially melt the lock so it stays closed. She starts having flashbacks and visions of things in her past as she finds a pair of pliers and she pulls out the bullets that are inside of her. Goldface breaks through. Joe has the bullets out of her at this point. She powers up. She kills Goldface with the pliers that she was using to pull out her own bullets. She just basically uses her powers to send the pliers going right through his eye and kills him. Simon and Carrie arrived because they think that Joe is doing something to Cameron, and so Joe's kind of defending herself and taking it out on them. Cameron also arrives. At this moment, the connection is made that Hammond is the big bad because the boss of Carrie and Simon, that he's the only person that could have ratted them out. And the connection to Hector Hammond is made, which freaks Cameron out. And we find out at the end of the issue that Obsidian is born, even though supposedly he's just a shell with the figure, with the physical body of Todd Rice inside. But he's just a shell. He's got no brain function pretty much at all. But Hector Hammond is planning on using this shell. And that pretty much wraps up issue 10. So it's issue 11. Tomar Rae, who is essentially a pseudo avatar of the red light, he embraces anger, even though, of course, you get the typical ring banter, like, oh, you must totally, like, I forget the phrase, but you must totally not give in to anger. And Tomar Rey goes off as like, hey, like, where were you when my planet died and everything else? And he was planning on using the ring to get his revenge. Hal, actually, who has been comatose all this time, wakes up and he seemingly is connected to Tomar in some way because he starts repeating Tomar's words as he comes out of his coma. Hector Hammond, his scientists have created this Mento device, which is, you know, we're sure, knowing the way Hector Hammond's history goes, this will lead to Hector Hammond being deformed, probably the way we know him to be. Well, as much as we're going to get in the absolute universe, that he uses this Mento device, which will put him in control of the Obsidian shell and use it to go after Joe because he really wants the ring. Obsidian itself, the actual creation, because of the connection to the Black, has this natural connection to Hal Jordan because Hal Jordan was a pseudo Black Hand at some, obviously not up until relatively recently. So Obsidian is going to almost instinctively be able to find Hal Jordan, and they're going to be able to use that connection to Hal Jordan to get to Joe. Blah, 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 blah. Carrie touches Joe's ring to kind of get an idea of what's going on. And she kind of has all these visions. She sees Tomar is a red. She sees Hal as a violet or sapphire. She sees Sinestro, who doesn't really factor into this book until later on. And I mean, like, the issue that we don't do tonight is the first big Sinestro issue. I think it's Steel as a blue. And we see John, I think
right? That's actually Martian Manhunter. I mean, not freaking a Manhunter.
Is it? Even though they say Steel?
I think it's a Manhunter.
Well, okay. Either way, it's left up in the air because it's not like they ever explore it or they set it up. So we don't really know, but he is blue. And I guess John is technically gold and not yellow, I guess, because we see John in this vision too. Mm-hmm. Either way, Hector-controlled Obsidian attacks Cameron's house, which I guess we're supposed to believe kills Carrie from dialogue we get, I think, in the next issue. We see a conversation between John and Guy on their elevated status, you know, in the universal cosmic plane and where they've leveled up to. And at that moment, Tomar Rey arrives and I think John was kind of expecting Tomar to come along eventually and join them. And Tomar Rey says, I'm not really here to join you. I'm here to take over. And that ends issue 11.
Yeah, because Carrie says no man escapes.
Oh, okay. You're right.
Right before she dies. So, and that's the only character we haven't seen. And I know there's a Steel being introduced in the Absolute Universe in terms of like our Steel, like Superman Steel. But I don't think that's what this is. The design is totally different. I think this is.
It threw me off too. But since they said Steel, I mean, again, which is stupid, which is again bad writing. It's like I mean, you don't have to, but either way. So, okay. So that ends that. So then we get to issue 12. Hector Hammond, the issue begins with, as so many of these annoying, so many of these issues begin in the same annoying fashion as we've discussed before about the ring talking to somebody, don't do this or do that. And so he actually literally hears the voice of Oa, Hector Hammond does, and he completely rejects it because he's just obsessed with trying to get Joe's ring, who, by the way, Joe's ring is right temporarily buried because of when Carrie was touching it right when the attack took place. Joe wasn't actually wearing her ring when the attack of Obsidian slash Hector Hammond takes place. So she doesn't have a ring on when this issue begins. We had a flashback to Hal and Joe at a funeral where, you know, Hal pretty much, we find out that on the surface, Hal has more or less sacrificed his own dreams and for everybody else, even though he says that's not what he's done. Everybody else has moved on to go pursue what they wanted to do in Hal's life, family-wise, but Hal's just kind of stayed behind. But he also feels guilty of not being there for Joe when she got married and obviously some of the problems that occurred after. So he swears that he will be there for her again. The Mento device that Hector Hammond keeps using starts to cause problems and pain for him, but of course Hector Hammond doesn't care because he just has tunnel vision, literally, in this. Hal senses that Todd Rice is actually inside the Obsidian shell, so and eventually this leads Hal to going sapphire and embracing love because to free Todd Rice from the shell, which also breaks Hector Hammond's connection to the Obsidian shell, if you will. It short circuits everything Hector Hammond was doing at the time. Now all of a sudden And I don't get the whole Simon Bass thing with his face being Dr. Doomish and being covered up and being scarred. I don't really care that much either. But he comes out and he points out that, hey, you got to see this. And above Cameron's like destroyed house or whatever, you see the Green Lantern, the big Green Lantern symbol in the sky, that Green Lantern that was the one that was over Evergreen that eventually fell on Evergreen. That now it's back. Now it's back. And Tom Ray shows up and he said that the actual translation for Lantern, and this is kind of stupid too, that the actual translation for Lantern is more gun. It's more basically a weapon. And guess what? Tomar's there to take that. So he's going to go kill Mogo with it. It's like, hey, you want to join me? And that ends issue 12.
Yeah. Look, Mark's right. These are probably the best issues of the series. The thing is, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't either.
With Morrison's run, I saw the knowledge that Morrison had and that he was digging and trying to like put all this stuff in there. So I could appreciate that, but it was almost like if you and I were to, for every guest we ever had or every guest appearance we were ever on, we just challenged everybody to a quiz about how much we know about Green Lantern and just started lording it over everybody. Yeah. Like that's I don't know that's what it felt like. So like he knew so much, he was bragging that he knew so much. And it just pissed me off that it was still so bad, despite him trying so hard and being freaking Grant Morrison, who I guess in a way, kind of like Ewing, the way I've described Ewing, there's good Grant Morrison and there's bad Grant Morrison. And there's batshit Grant Morrison. And this is, I saw concepts I was curious about. And things he was trying to introduce or build on in the mythos. But at least it was contextualized within a mythos I already understood. With this, okay, it's bad Al Ewing, in a sense, because I am interested in some of the stuff like the spy stuff and you know, the introduction of characters like Goldface and see how they're interpreted in this universe. The problem is every piece of the Lantern side of this is so indecipherably crazy that it just caused me to straight up check out. So I am no longer even mad at this series. I can see some of these interesting bits. I just, the one thing that would keep me here is the one thing you caused me to check out on. So now I just don't care.
Again, something we alluded to when we started this episode, which already seems somewhat endless, though I'm kidding about that. The fact that he openly chose to bombard you in the beginning of this series, to just bombard you with all these terms and all this stuff, to just completely confuse you and turn you off. At least with Morrison, the thing Morrison was really guilty of was, and you touched upon it to a certain extent, that he beat you over the head with the fact that he was an expert at the Silver Age, but he gave you no context for these things that when they were dropped into a story, or even gave you an idea, oh, this is the issue we're referring to, or this is the story, or this is why this person's important, give like the editor's note kind of thing. That's more what he was guilty of. Because his knowledge was impressive, but it didn't matter because most people were going to be lost as far as understanding. Okay, we're supposed to get this. We're supposed to make a connection, but how could we make a connection? This is just, it's slop because you're taking, we know, like we talked about before, it's like taking a definition, pulling that out of a hat, and then taking a name out of the other hat and saying, okay, that's what these two are going to be in this universe without any logic, without any, I mean, having different colors to do completely different things. You're still kind of confused about the green, you know, who's really the good guy here. I mean, we assume we'll find out the green power is ultimately better because we know Sinestro is kind of working with the, you know, with the black and everything too. And the controllers and all this crap, but it's like, I don't care either. And again, yeah, these were the absolute best issues because even though they still had some of that annoying ring talking to you crap, but it didn't. I don't even know if it began every one of these issues, but this pattern. But it didn't have as. But you didn't have as much of that albatross around your neck, that weight dragging you down, because there actually was a lot of revelations of what was going on, and you had some plot points, and you had this making the connection that Hector Hammond is the one who's the bad guy, and you should really be afraid that Hector Hammond is the bad guy, as in Joe should be Cameron. Cameron's look kind of says it all about that, and the fact that they've kind of at least rehabilitated Hal, to a certain extent, and all these different things. So there's been some plot movement. They still have this habit of, of having, we want to work this character in some way. And sometimes they get tied to how you really know them, like Obsidian. That gets tied in a little bit. But then you have other characters that are kind of different than they are and representing different things. And I don't particularly care. These are probably the best four issues because, again, you're drowning in less exposition and confusing metaphors and analogies and term matching, but it's still not. But then again, like I alluded to, once you get to issue 13, it kind of goes right down to the new issue. It goes right in the toilet again, because first of all, it has nothing to do with Joe or Hal or Tomar or anything. You get Sinestro in it, but it's all dealing with Ran and controllers and having all these subplots and other DC characters again shoehorned in. They have nothing that we don't really care about. And so complete whatever progress they had made in these issues, I think issue 13, when we talk about it, whenever the hell that's going to be, just kind of brings it to a screeching halt. So congratulations.
I just, the thing about this is the point of, so like, it's one thing if like Abinsur and all these other alien creatures that are entering the fray speak like this and refer to this, but the point of bringing humans into this is to give us the opportunity to become the sort of dumbing it down for the rest of us so that other humans can understand what in the world Abin is saying when he says, be without fear and it is Tomar and blah, blah, blah. What he means is he's doing this. But you just speak in your regular human voice. Problem is, issue 11, we see Guy and John again, and John's like, your first graduate at the Red Level, the first Ian Rao, like they're
yep.
Guy and John are talking like one of these other alien lanterns already. And then when Hal does light up with his power, he's talking about whoever's hunting us wanted a Tomar, but the Black Star itself is Tomar anomaly. What is chaotic action? Hal starts talking like this. So our mouthpiece, Joe's the only one not really talking like this, but she's as lost as we are. So that doesn't help us when we're also trying to gain understanding or whatever the hell's going on. The problem is issue 12 ends with the very first interesting thing is Lantern is a poor translation, Tomar Joe. A better word in your language is gun. Anyway, I'm going to go kill Mogo with it coming. He's the first person who talks regularly. We might actually get some semblance of understanding from Tomar, or whatever we're supposed to be calling him, than anybody else we've joined, including our human characters, who are supposed to be our mouthpiece to understand all of this. I don't care anymore. It's 12 issues in with this Red Tomar. You have given me something that I go, lantern-wise, I'm interested again. But it took 12 issues, and I'm still confused. So I don't care. I had to read it, so I'm re-frustrated. But tomorrow, I'm not going to care again. I won't be frustrated. This will all be gone. I don't care. So I'm not mad at Al Ewing. For art, by the way, art changed good. Like the art. Art is great. Although I think it's still weird that for some reason we're still drawing Hal like he has freaking Yu-Gi-Oh hair.
Yeah.
But whatever. Also in issue 10, that was an obscene amount of blood. She should have been dead panels before that if she was really losing that much blood. But like I checked out. I don't care. I'm not excited. I'm not mad. I just checked out.
Yeah. It is what it is. I mean, I'm glad, I suppose, if we had to go back and do a recap of multiple issues at once, I'm kind of glad that this was the batch of issues that we had, though, because, again, this is, not that it's saying much, I suppose, but this is clearly the best of what we had, and it was probably, and it was, I think that's what why 13 threw me off so much when I started reading it, too, was just the fact that, okay, we've been doing so well on limiting the amount of head-scratching or head-banging stuff that we were getting, and then you begin 13, and it's like, okay, you know, again, they got to break Sinestro down, because his name really isn't Sinestro, the way, you know, it's broken into syllables and things like
Sinestro.
Sinestro, yeah. Yabba, dabba, do. and then the whole thing with Ran, and it's not even Adam Strange, because you kind of thought they were going to go the Adam Strange route, but it's not Adam Strange. And that they start instilling all these other characters. It's like, hey, is this a character who maybe I would know? It's like, oh, no, it's not. And it, who the hell cares? I mean, that in a way, so that's why I'm glad we stopped where we did. It's going to suck when we pick up next time to go with 13. But yeah, it's really dragging on. And it's, yeah. But we kept our word. We revisited it.
Yep. So what's next?
I guess
are we moving on to greener pastures?
Wouldn't almost anything be greener
after this?
I guess we could talk about we should talk at least a little bit about the Godzilla Minus Zero.
Yeah.
Trailer. I had to make sure I got that right, because not that any of the titles actually mathematically make sense, but I had to distinguish between minus one and minus zero.
No, it was like, what, 40 seconds? And barely,
not much. Even
that wasn't, not all 40 seconds was footage. It was, you know, there's like 10 seconds at the end of like black screen and coming and, you know, the date and all that stuff that it's coming out.
The Toho logo.
Yeah. Although I wish they would, do they still do, it's been a minute. I haven't rewatched it close enough to remember. Do they still keep the old Toho, not just the logo, but with like the sunburst behind it where it's really grainy?
I thought they did, but then again,
because that's such a classic. I just remember watching every Godzilla movie and seeing that ridiculous bright sunspot behind the Toho logo.
To me, this certainly looked like the same stuff that I've been seeing whenever I watch either Shin Godzilla or any of the other stuff on HBO Max or Tubi or whatever. So I think at least they're being consistent with how it's appeared in over the last, I don't know, 20 something years, I'm guessing, but I could be wrong. I'm obviously not an expert on that compared to you are. But
yeah. I'm talking about, you know, like, you know, it's dun 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 dun, and then you hear Godzilla's roar, and then we jump into the movie. I just every time I see that, so jumping into the teaser, that is, it starts off, well, I'm not going to go in order of the teaser. I'm going to go in order of, I think, of the evolution of Godzilla as we see him, because the start of it would really be the Godzilla that we saw in Minus One is the Godzilla that we see walking by the Statue of Liberty. The Godzilla that we see earlier in the teaser, where he's coming up out of the waves behind the boat, that is a later version of Godzilla. And they mention, we believe this because the Americans are talking now in this trailer about dropping a third bomb, which Mark and I were talking offline. We're thinking, That's a flashback to Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Yeah, I would assume that they were referring to the third bomb that they were planning on dropping. If Japan didn't surrender after the first two, there was a third bomb they were planning on dropping. But obviously, it never got that far.
Yeah, time wise, that doesn't those bombs wouldn't be the cause of Godzilla's mutation, because that happened 2 years before. Minus One takes place, right?
Yes, this movie takes place two years after the last movie.
Yeah, we're thinking that Godzilla evolves because they're talking in the in the summary or whatever for this movie or the solicit, I don't know what the, what do they call it? The blurb, the official blurb about the plot of the movie.
The synopsis?
Yeah, the synopsis. And it starts with, thanks to the naivety of the U.S. pushing nuclear tests. So we're thinking that they're referring to the testing. What is it? How do you pronounce it? The atoll in Inuktitut or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because time-wise, that matches up. I mean, obviously, we could be wrong. But there's also some weird elements happening here with, like, the stuff floating in the sky. You caught that? I don't know what that is. I have no idea what that is.
No, that's certainly probably it certainly gives more credence to the idea that there's going to be, again, it's how you interpret the quote unquote new threat mentioned in the trailer. Whether we're supposed to assume the new threat is just another Godzilla, a evolved Godzilla, or it literally is what it seemingly on the surface implies, that there's something else besides Godzilla that they have to deal with. But that's one of those things that the trailer is not going to help you with, because we don't know what the real meaning of that sentence is.
Yeah. And I've already heard lots of weird shit. Like, somebody posted something on it. Like, I'm not even, cause I'm pretty sure this is a joke because of the content of it, but somebody out there said that they heard that Rodan is featured in this at one point, but only for like 10 seconds. And I think I think that was meant to be a joke. Maybe the reason I think it's a joke is because Rodan's the bitch, right? Rodan's the kaiju bitch. He gets slapped around every time. I'm thinking that's what somebody meant. Like, oh, he's in there 10 seconds. It only takes 10 seconds for Godzilla to kick his ass. But I've heard rumors of other Godzilla. Somebody thought that it was going around online for a little bit. People were thinking that shot of Godzilla behind the boat with the extra stuff, there was like, oh, this is confirmation of Space Godzilla.
Yeah, no.
As opposed to like an evolved Godzilla because of the nuclear tests.
Well, let's be honest. What were the this would be really bad and really dumb, but what would the odds be of us of having like two Godzilla movies in the next 2 years with Space Godzilla being in both?
Sure. The Legendary Universe, it makes a whole lot more sense because the real origin of Space Godzilla is like just aliens messing around with Godzilla's DNA, right? If I remember that right. So if anybody was going to introduce aliens, do we think it's going to be or something close to that? Do we think that's going to be the Legendary Universe or this universe? I think it's just a mutated Godzilla because of the results of nuclear testing. But it looks cool. It looks like we're keeping the visuals. I also saw a couple of cinematic shots in there in terms of our POV characters and stuff like that. So, I'm forgetting the guy's name, our soldier character from the first movie, just him screaming and stuff like that and piloting something like, so it looks, from what we see, it looks like the first movie did, only maybe better. I would assume he's got a bigger budget given how successful it was.
Yeah, I would assume but again, the key with these movies is not to keep going exponentially bigger on the budget, because that just ultimately creates more of a problem as time goes by, because then you have to be more profitable over and over and over again in order just to be just as profitable as your earlier movie was for a smaller budget. So I think it is interesting what we see in the trailer and what we don't see in the trailer, but it would have been nice if they gave us a Kong and Godzilla trailer as opposed to just, but two along with it, but we'll take what we can get at the moment. I did see that article you were talking about, the Rodan thing. I just saw the post about that. That would kind of be funny. It would be funny only in the context of it might be this universe that they're trying to establish that they're not going to have kaijus up the wazoo. So maybe in a way that would be more of a middle finger to Rodan then. But nonetheless.
Sorry, I'm desperate to call Rodan the kaiju bitch because otherwise it's Anguirus. I don't want that.
No, but at least he's loyal as opposed to Rodan, who's just – Rodan has no redeeming value whatsoever based on a loyalty scale. I mean, that bitch will change size 8 times in the same movie given the opportunity. So I dislike Rodan so much for that reason. But But nonetheless, now we did today, as we were, nothing's been dropped yet. We don't get to see the footage, but we know there was Doomsday footage shown at CinemaCon, which is...
There was also Godzilla Minus Zero-wise, there was a new poster revealed today as well. Did you see that? It's like the Empire State Building sticking out of the fog, but Godzilla's tail wrapped around it.
No, I did not see that. But yeah, so the Doomsday stuff is, it doesn't sound like it was a real trailer anyway. It just sounds like it was footage. It doesn't seem like it was particularly long. So I don't know we may eventually see the footage, but it's not like, certainly the way it was described and what was in it, doesn't seem like this is going to be the first real trailer that we're going to get out of that. It just seems like it's more footage. Obviously Robert Downey Jr. was there, so was Chris Evans with the Russos and everybody talking about Doomsday, which I guess at the moment maybe they won't move off that date because they certainly doubled down on the 18th or whatever it was, making it clear that all their marketing for today indicated that it was still going to be on that day. But that still will be interesting to see what happened. They might stick to it and say they don't care, but it still seems like an odd choice to, why would you go against direct competition? Even though we know you're going to be the winner financially, but still it's going to be peeling off some of the audience for your movie on opening weekend. So why would you not want to move away if you got the chance? Now, I guess now you would not do it because you want to save face. And now it would look like you're running away from Dune, when if you had just not picked that day to begin with, which is what they should have done. I don't know why they moved into the same week as Dune anyway. That's why Jumanji moved away from both of them. I think Jumanji was originally supposed to open up like the week after both of them. And now Jumanji moved up to opening before both of them. I don't know if it's 1 week before or 2 weeks before, but that one moved up. Kind of surprised we didn't get that trailer yet, since I know that they talked about that at CinemaCon too. I guess they played some footage. I wouldn't be surprised if we get that trailer soon. That's going to be, I think we'll get that trailer. Get that trailer sooner rather than later, since we've seen nothing about it so far. But yeah, so we have some time for some feedback. So Corwin just left us a voicemail, I think based on what we talked about last week. So we're going to listen to it now and discuss.
Hey, fellas, it's Corwin. Just listened to the last episode, and I'm so happy that you liked They Will Kill You. I forgot the name. Sorry, I'm driving. The Zazie Beetz movie, because me and one of my best friends saw it, and we both came out on completely opposite ends of it. He did not like it at all, and I thought it was solid. I mean, yes, it's a bit predictable. It falls into that B-movie category of gore and ridiculousness, but I thought that, you know, they went for it. They just had the guts to really just go all out and be as goofy and as crazy as they want to. So glad to hear you liked it. I will check out the other movies you guys were talking about, especially Chad with that Earth movie. I forgot the name of it anyway. I'm driving. But yeah, just want to say what's up. I'm glad to hear you guys marked up that movie, and looking forward to more recommendations.
What's funny about this, well, there's a few things, but what's one of the things that's funny about this is the Google Translator striking again, because he says it falls into that B movie category of gore and ridiculousness, but it literally spells out B E E instead of just B movie, like the letter B.
Yeah, I noticed
that. So now I'm thinking of the B movie crossed with Army of Darkness or something.
Oh God, I remember when the B movie came out, when Seinfeld, when that movie came out.
Oh God,
yes. An appropriate reaction, yes. Yeah, made a lot of money, but I don't know why. I never saw it. I never had a desire to see it.
So They Will Kill You, he was talking. So I guess you got to hook up with Corwin to geek out about that one.
Yeah,
I will admit, I saw the trailer for that on YouTube, what in the marketing push up for the release of that movie, and I was actually interested. It reminded me, not like, I guess, in tone, but what were those... the two movies that came out, the girl with the shotgun leg or whatever.
Oh, you mean the Grindhouse movies, the one, yes, the one, the Grindhouse one, the Tarantino Rodriguez. Yeah, grind. I'm trying to remember what the two were. The Death Proof was the Kurt Russell one.
Right. Yeah.
And what, I'm trying. What the hell was the zombie one? Death Proof was the second one when they first came and that first came out in the theater and they were stuck together. Death Proof was the second one. I'll find what it is.
Gotcha. Planet Terror.
That's it. Planet Terror, because Josh Brolin was in that, and you're thinking of. But Rose McGowan, I think, was the one who had the shotgun leg.
Yeah. So, like, obviously, like, those are very – it's Tarantino, so it's freaking – like, it's very stylized for those grindhouse movies. But beyond that, like, just the ridiculousness action-wise, gore-wise of it, in terms of the trailer that we got for that movie, did make me go, oh, that might be fun to see. I haven't seen it yet, but I am curious about it.
Yeah, to be fair, even though it's not really in your wheelhouse, I think you'll enjoy that when you get a chance to watch it. It's certainly, considering the movie is, and again, as people pointed out, it seemed an odd choice to release this movie in Ready or Not 2 within two weeks of each other, though I guess originally they were supposed to literally come out the same week. So I guess there is a saving grace there, I suppose, even though I think They Will Kill You is still going to be the loser from a financial perspective of the two. But those movies are very similar looking, but I had no desire to see Ready or Not. I guess when it's free on streaming, I'll watch it. And don't get me wrong, I thought the first movie was somewhat interesting, but first of all, the fact that it's like 7 years. It took like seven friggin' years to make the second one, which makes no damn sense. And then it looks so derivative, and I really don't like Catherine Newton. I don't really like her all that much. So that was her coming on as the sister had no appeal. It didn't look nearly as it, the cast didn't look. You know, I know Buffy's in it, but didn't look nearly as appealing as the original. So it's like, did we really need a sequel 7 years after the original? It's like, no, we didn't. So, and I like Zazie Beetz. She was, I think I've enjoyed her in almost everything I've seen her in, including Deadpool 2 and obviously Joker, but she's good. I like her.
Yeah. And the movie he was talking about that I wrote, Man from Earth. It's if it was free on Vudu with commercials or Fandango at home, I guess.
I think it's free on Tubi.
Yeah, I think it's free. Usually whatever's free on Fandango at home is free in a lot of places.
But I stumbled. The reason why I'm saying is because right after we discussed it, I was happened to be on one of those platforms. I'm pretty sure it would have been Tubi that I actually saw it pop up either as a recommendation or was in one of the categories. And said, oh, that's kind of funny because we just talked about it. And and maybe it isn't funny because I Googled it while we were talking. So maybe we know how they stalk you online, even though one's on a Fire Stick and one's on a browser, that it's not like there is a loose connection with your Amazon account. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility. This is the reason why this movie popped up in this category at a higher profile than it would otherwise.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, thanks for reaching out, Corwin. You missed it by a few days, man. We got the warning that we needed to have somebody leave a message before the voicemail disappeared. We should have just reached out to you and let you do it for us.
Yep.
All right. What else?
We might as well do that. Do you want to read the? Yeah, if it's free on Tubi. The Man from Earth is free on Tubi. I'm looking at it right now. Let's do Shane's. Why don't you do Shane's?
637? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Shane wrote to us, sent us an email about March-ish, but, you know, I call it a win. We're doing it within a month. How about that? My quick thoughts on the trailer. A trailer should make the viewer appreciate and want to watch the show. This trailer did the opposite and pretty much killed my interest. There was nothing in the trailer that I liked, if I'm honest. The writers and producers seem embarrassed to be making a Green Lantern show, down to selling the show as a completely different genre in terms of subject matter, look, and tone. I'm not bothered about the lack of special effects. They might well need more time to work on them. We did get a flying scene, and Hal starting to make a construct, so that's something. Is Hal racist towards other Green Lanterns? He never talks to them because they're alien? I don't like the implications of that at all. 3 F-bombs in a 2-minute trailer tells me the full show will likely be much worse, and I don't care to suffer through that much profanity. I don't like the implication that old, tired Howe will be retired or killed before we ever got to see him in his prime, and they're definitely telegraphing that. I'll give them this. As far as the look of the characters, the casting seems sound. Howe's appearance reminds me of Howe at the start of the 1990 Green Lantern series with Pat Broderick drawing him. Yes, agreed. I'm clearly not the intended target audience for this show. As a big Green Lantern fan, I should be, but it looks like they're taking the interest of people like me for granted and chasing a different audience. However, if the full show turns out to be excellent, because sometimes trailers deceive, as we all know, I'll be more than happy to be wrong about all of this. I'd love to be a big fan of a Green Lantern television show if I can. I'd love to see the popularity of the characters grow. Time will tell. Cheers, Shane.
Well, some of this, obviously, some takes on this we've discussed. Some of these points we have discussed. I would say we talked about the possible context for Hal and the alien lantern conversation. Hopefully that is more of the real reason why, or else it doesn't make it honestly wouldn't make any sense at all if that's not the explanation or something in that same vein, because we know Hal's been Green Lantern for a long ass time, so the odds of him not encountering, plus we know he's going to have some kind of relationship with Sinestro, whether they're going to go with the mentor mentee relationship or not. The reality is we know that he's going to know Sinestro, so he certainly deals with aliens. So I think there's going to be I do think plot wise there'll be a reason for that. I agree, as I've talked about, I agree with the F bombs. I think that doesn't bode well for the show, that you're going to be getting a lot of profanity, I'm assuming. It could not be. They could just be trying to jam as many F bombs they can to kind of get the tone that make it clear this is adult. But I would suspect there's a lot more that we're not getting. The audience, yeah, I do think if anything, they're taking us for granted because they know we're going to at least check it out, most of us, even if we're not necessarily, if we're nervous still about the tone or how this is going to play out. I think they know we're going to check it out. If we're Green Lantern fans, if we're DC fans, we're at least going to be there watching it. So even if we're going in with some trepidation that they might be able to win us over just by the content, and they're trying to, yes, I think they're absolutely trying to make this clear that it's not just a superhero show. This is not your typical superhero show, because they're trying to reach a broader audience. Whether that's smart, you know, whether that works, those are things that we can discuss and debate, especially as things play out, and even doing a Monday morning quarterbacking on it. But I think that's the reason why. And yeah, Hal, obviously, the idea to make Hal potentially old, bitter, past his prime. And we never got to see Hal in his prime ever, which we still could, I guess, in some animated project.
Were there flashbacks in this season? We don't know.
Yeah, but depending how they do it, because I don't think they're going to want to spend a whole lot of money de-aging it. But yeah, it is what it is. They clearly want Jon Stewart to be the main Green Lantern they're going to focus in on. That's why they made him younger than Guy or Hal. Do we agree? You know, do I like it? Do you like it? Do a lot of people like it? Probably not. But we'll have to. It is what it is. And on the bright side, if we don't like it and James Gunn really is living on thin ice with Paramount taking over, then it may not matter in another 2 years anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I do agree the reference, because I think Ralph over at Lanterns Live has been circulating this image of basically putting a screenshot of Kyle Chandler's Hal, like walking down the road with his jacket on or whatever, side by side with a drawing of Pat Broderick era Green Lantern with the gray temples and a jacket walking down the side of a road back when he was kind of hiking his way across the country in the beginning of that series. So it's definitely Pat Broderick era Hal. So in terms of the look, say what you want about the age, Kyle Chandler and his costume or whatever in terms of his civilian costume looks straight out of at least an era of Hal's comic book. So
yeah, it definitely. Would be an accurate representation of the Gerard Jones era. So yeah. I think that's, so you can't necessarily say you can criticize, but saying, oh, it's not comic accurate. Well, it is comic accurate based on a certain point of view, you know, based on a certain period of time. It is. So that's not, and again, that's not the biggest issue I think people have with this, or what their biggest concerns about. It's like, based on the fact that, okay, we move beyond the fact that we probably wouldn't have wanted Hal to be old, certainly compare any older than John Stewart, or, I mean, maybe a few years, but in still in the same basic generation as John Stewart and Guy Gardner, and thus the reason why they eventually all end up close, even though they butt heads, at least Guy and everybody really, but Guy and Hal especially. But once that's gone, that ship has sailed, so it is what it is. And it's like, okay, is this a good representation physically of the characters? Like, yeah. Now, it still remains to be seen how much we see true Hal in the way Kyle Chandler acts. You know, there's some things that seem Hal-like. There's some things that maybe don't seem Hal-like. But we're getting snippets. And like we talked about with Will, it's probably a lot of the stuff, if not all of it's from the very first, you know, first couple of episodes. If not just the first episode, so we don't know, but yeah,
for sure. All right, what's next?
I don't know if we have anything, do we?
Let's see.
Was there something else you wanted to talk about?
Oh yeah, sorry, I forgot. So I. Did I mention this on air, or did I mention this to you? The White Lantern figure that was on its way to me.
I don't think you mentioned. You mentioned it was coming to you. You did not mention the postmortem
that I was expecting it the very next day, right?
Yeah, you didn't mention the postmortem on it.
Yeah, so it did arrive, and the box that it was shipped in, totally fine. So I open up the package. And the box of the figure is dented like it was dropped, except, again, the box it was shipped in is fine. So that means GameStop shipped it with the damage. So I email their support team. I send them a picture and all this stuff. I don't hear back. So I say, screw it. And I just take the box that it came in and the figure down to my local GameStop, and they process a return there. And, you know, I get a refund, and then they order me another one because there's not one in the store. They order me another one online to be sent to me. So it won't be shipped to the store. The interesting thing about that, the whole reason I'm telling this story to begin with, other than apparently when I posted about this box being damaged in Myron's like Facebook group that he has for Green Lantern fans, a guy reached out and said that he had the same problem. And then a different guy said that I heard from a lot of people that this White Lantern is coming damaged from GameStop. And he says, I probably heard that 5 or 6 times. So apparently this is a widespread issue with this figure. So that's part of the reason I'm mentioning it. The other reason I'm mentioning it is when I got this thing refunded to me, I got refunded $36.78. So the price of the figure, shipping and handling, taxes and fees, right? When I got charged for the replacement, I got charged $29.22. I don't know what triggered the difference, but it was not being shipped to the store. It's still being shipped to me. The only difference is the employee at GameStop ordered it from their store. So I'm thinking if you got, I told this story to Jim and he thinks that it's worth mentioning. If you're trying to save money buying these GameStop figures through the GameStop website, like to claim it and get it sent to your house, you might be able to save money by having the employees at your local GameStop pre-order it from their computers for you to ship it to your house, because apparently it negated the shipping and handling costs.
That is interesting. That is an interesting little caveat. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, It's probably fair to say when you're looking at this, if this has happened to other people, and again, you can't, it's easy to blame GameStop on one level but we don't know that's really truly the case, because it's very possible that they're getting, that the master case that they're getting them in is where the damage occurred in. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, they could, and I guess you're only limited to what you can do. If for the sake of argument, if you're getting whatever the case is of this, whether it's a case of six or more, if you're getting a case of six and like two figures are damaged in every single case, or two boxes or less than mint in every, not that they necessarily promise us mint condition, I don't necessarily think, but the point, but either way, the point is that if, let's say, out of every six, regardless of the case size, out of every six figures that they have a certain, there's a certain number out of every six, even if it, for whatever reason, one or two out of every six has some kind of imperfection on the box. I mean, they don't have much of a choice. I mean, they're going to have to ship it. I mean, unless they're going to cancel somebody's order. So it sucks. It does suck, especially because obviously you didn't take my advice and just open it. But you probably will if you get the next one damaged, right?
Yeah. Well, so here's the deal. I stopped by that GameStop again like a day or two later because I don't know if you've seen, there's all kinds of blind boxes and stuff out there. Have you seen the ones that look like it comes in a ramen cup? And they're like Godzilla figures inside of there with Godzilla, like little vinyls of Godzilla kaiju holding ramen bowls.
Part of me wants to say yes, but I don't think I have.
Yeah, it's got like all Japanese wording on it. Like it's very, very, you know, classic Japanese blind box kind of a style thing. But you open it and you get a little vinyl figure of one of the kaiju holding a little bowl of ramen. And you get like a tiny little, maybe 2-inch patch that of like the face of the figure in the style. Anyways, they released those a few months ago. And then recently they dropped like blacklight versions of those that actually look really cool. And I was hoping to get like a Godzilla. So I stopped by to pick up one of those. And I was like, while I was there, I was like, let me check the figures they have on the wall. They have a White Lantern on the wall now. And I usually don't do this, but I did grab it and then shuffle it behind a whole bunch of other figures on the wall. Because if this second one comes damaged, you know, it's not like I hit it in such a unique spot that no one's ever going to find it. So it's possible it'll be gone. But I did like make it a little harder to find.
You could have just bought it.
No, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to go through the whole return or order canceling bullshit again. So if the second one comes damaged, I will, of course, let everybody here know. But I believe I can find one.
Yeah, those ramen, I'm looking at those now. Those Rakamoto things. Those are. I'm looking. Yeah, there are. It's impressive. I mean, I get the selection is still pretty good. I wish they would have had a few more characters thrown in, but
they're cool, right?
Yeah. The
Mothra is pretty cool. Godzilla is pretty cool. Both Godzillas. Rodan's kind of, purple Mecha Godzilla is cool.
Yeah. I think purple Mecha, actually it's funny because purple Mecha Godzilla, I do prefer, even though he's not, obviously he's much more common than the super slur prize one that, which is funny because his Mecha Godzillas not all of them are holding stuff the same way. That is interesting because little Godzilla's not holding squat and neither are the Mecha Godzillas. I like the super duper slur prize Godzilla, which of course is the rarest of the rare, one out of 96, is cool. Jet Jaguar is cool too.
That's the one I got. I ended up getting Jet Jaguar. Yeah.
Even though the color scheme is obviously completely anti-Jet Jaguar, but still,
for sure. Mothra, I think, is the best. But honestly, yes. Look, would it be cool to have the one in 96? Sure. But I think the one in 4 Godzilla looks fine. I think it looks awesome. Those pops of pink and yellow on the kind of tealish skin.
Yeah, even a little Godzilla being in pink and yellow, that Mothra looks more like Mothman. It does. The way he does kind of look like Mothman more than Mothra, but I do appreciate the ball. And I did, yeah, those are neat. I mean, it's still kind of hard to justify these things cost $15. So much. Yeah, they cost so much money. Yeah. Even that little one that I showed you when I got the Godzilla keyring from Target. But to be fair, the ramen noodle box is packaging is pretty cool.
I got one of the regular ones when they dropped because I was also hoping to get a Godzilla or maybe a Rodan, but I ended up getting Mecha Godzilla of the regular one. And then so I was like, I'm not going to try these again. I'm not that intrigued by the design or any of that stuff to keep trying for them. There's not as many I want. And then they dropped the blacklight versions, and just the different coloration made me like easily two or three more than I would in the regular style. So I was like, all right, screw it, I'm going to try for it. But Jet Jaguar wasn't one of the ones I was after. I might just send that to you on Christmas time or something if you liked it.
Actually, if you look, if looking at the, because if you go to Big Bad Toy Store, you technically could pre-order the regular ones, not the black light ones. And if you look at those, I mean, yeah, it's a big difference. I mean, honestly, Jet Jaguar might be the best one of that group only because he looks the most, that's the most color accurate. Rodan actually looks borderline, I think I might, I like the bright colors of the black light ones, but I might like the regular, the actual Rodan one in the classic wave. Is because it is more accurate. There is something appealing about that one. But yeah, I definitely the black light ones are definitely they're definitely better, I would say. So that was if I bumped into those, I would consider it. I'm looking at all the different Rockamoto things I have even on they don't have that much.
I see the Peanuts one looks interesting. The Sesame Street one looks cool. There's a Betty Boop one apparently coming.
Yeah, that's true. I did see. I do see the Betty, and they have Astro Boy.
Yeah, Astro Boy kind of fits with the doing the whole it's a Japanese like ramen thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But the Godzilla ones seem to be I think the black light ones are the ones that are the best set. So yeah,
I think I'm gonna buy two more, and if I don't get what I'm after, I'm done. Unless I can find like the 1-in-4 Godzilla because it's so easily accessible for like $5. If I see someone charging the full 15 or something, I'm gonna be like, screw it.
Yeah, you can look at eBay too, but you're right, you'll probably be paying through the nose. So
well, that's what I mean. eBay, just check it out on eBay, and if someone's paying trying to pay 15 for a 1-in-4, I'm just gonna be like, are you serious? You pay 15 for the chance at the 1-in-48 or the 1-in-96.
Well, yeah, but you're not other than the shipping, which will end up killing you anyway. But the reality is, it's not like the raw price is being hiked up. I mean, if the going regular price to get a shot to get any of these is $14.99, and they're charging you, hey, you can get this. Problem is, of course, it's going to be opened. Yeah, or unless, I mean, it may not be open, but I don't think any of us at this point would roll the dice on buying one of these, something like this on eBay without knowing what you were getting. But still, I mean, there's enough of these that are 1-in-4 that I think it would be interesting. And it's kind of funny that there's like almost no middle ground. You got the two 1-in-4s. I mean, there is middle ground technically, but you go really off the scale once you get to the super supplies ones and the super duper supplies one. But yeah, those are cute.
They're cool. They're cool little figures. They're like a really they're kind of they feel like a bad plastic dog toy. So it's not like a hard vinyl. It's just it's not squeaky toy, but firmer than that. It just feels like a bad plastic dog toy. That's the only thing I don't like about it is I wish they were like actual vinyl figures, but they're not.
Yeah, and GameStop still has the Tokidoki ones, the ones that Tokidoki ones, the ones where I think I got my Godzilla from, my bag clip / keychain thing.
No, I'd been buying because I bought three of these. I ended up buying the Godzilla magnets, like the heads of the kaiju. Did you see those blind boxes?
No, I did not.
So there was let's see. It is the ICHIBANSHO figure, Godzilla monster head magnets. There's a Shin Godzilla one. There's like a classic Godzilla one, a more like 80s era Godzilla one. There's King Caesar. There's a Ghidorah, because you can't have all three. It's just one of the Ghidorah heads. And then oh God, what's his name? The guy with the visor and the blades.
Gigan?
Gigan. Yeah. Yeah. And I ended up getting Classic Godzilla, King Caesar, and Gigan when I really wanted the kind of mid-era Godzilla, like the 70s, 80s version, or Ghidorah. The first one I ended up getting was King Caesar, and I was like, eh. But I ended up getting at least a Godzilla and Gigan when I bought two more. But they're pretty cool. So it's like mounted, like someone who goes hunting mounts the head of a deer. It's just like the head of one of the kaiju, but magnet form, so you can stick it on your fridge.
Yeah, that is neat.
So those are cool. I've been finding a lot of cool little Godzilla minis that I've been interested in. They've got a lot of them out now. There's like little keychains and things like that too. I think they're coming out with like a blind, like fake little backpacks and stuff like that. There's all kinds of like these weird Godzilla blind boxes coming out right now.
They have a Blacklight Godzilla, the one you're looking at, $17.98, free shipping. But it says free delivery. That's always shaky what that means, because I've noticed that lately, that it used to just say free shipping, and now it says free delivery, which makes me wonder what exactly is there a difference on this. Let's see. Da-da-da. Nope, free USB ground advantage. So, yeah. So
well, there's somebody trying to sell the damn yellow Mechagodzilla 1-in-48 for $150 too. So like.
No, I know, but I'm saying, but the point is, this is close. This is close to retail price. Plus, you don't have to pay shipping for it. So if you really want one and you don't get
someone's got the 1-in-4 Godzilla on here for $10, but they're also charging $26.32 for shipping.
Well, I know, that's what I mean. There's a few of these that are $17.98 and like $19.98, but you get free shipping. Rodan, there's an $18.98 with free shipping. The purple Mecha Godzilla is $16.97 with free shipping. So these are not actually outrageous at all. It should make you happy, Chet Jaguar. Somebody's selling them for $23.42. $50 from Mothra, the black light one. But yeah, so that's something to consider, Chad, because it looks like at least you could get the one you wanted without spending really much more than you would pay to just get a chance to get one randomly. So it's not bad.
For sure. Sorry to take you guys down a blind box alley. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
LanternCast@gmail.com, the website, LanternCast@gmail.com, the email, LanternCast.com, the website. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GeoCast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail like Corwin, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.